Sunday morning. As is our custom, the first thing we take care of is to read to you the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophy and recommend to you that you stop at the book table or the usher's table to pick up this little document. In it you will find our schedule for 3 months, the topics be taken up on Sundays, and at the same time, some very useful information. And many carry this little pamphlet around in their pockets during the week to read the paragraphs and so forth. It's something to think about. Can you hear me? Everybody hears me well?
Yes. Good.
So before we begin, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profound conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And as stated in here, you will find the schedule. Today is February the 25th.
January 25th.
Month ahead. The topic this morning, pitfalls on the path of progress. And at the bottom, you'll see hours and so forth, and mention of a library that's open every Wednesday from 5:15 to 7:15 p.m. It's a reference library, and there's always a volunteer there to familiarize you with what's available in the library. On the back, you'll notice, I think there's some 28 lodges located all over the world. As is our custom to start off this morning's talk lecture, there will be a reading from the famous little book called the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, Devotion by Means of Self-Restraint. The excerpt we will read begins, "He should raise the self," small letters, "by the self. Let him not suffer the self to be lowered. The self is the friend of self," small letters, "and is like, in like manner, self is its own enemy. Self is the friend of the man who is self-conquered. So self, like a foe, hath enmity to him who is not self-conquered. The self of the man who is self-subdued, small letter, and free from desire and anger, is intent on the supreme self in heat and cold, in pain and pleasure, in honor and ignominy. The man who hath spiritual knowledge and discernment, who standeth upon the pinnacle, and hath subdued the senses, to whom gold and stone are the same, is said to be devoted. And he is esteemed among all, whether amongst his friends and companions, in the midst of enemies and those who stand aloof or remain neutral, with those who have and those who hate, those who love and those who hate, and in the company of sinners or the righteous, such a man is of equal mind.
So when we think about the pitfalls on the path to progress, that reading from the Bhagavad Gita gives us an idea of what we should do. And we will be revisiting part of that quote in a little bit. So the topics, as was stated, for January, the way we work it is that the Sunday classes always come under the same umbrella topic. And for this month of January, we were looking at the path of spiritual evolution. The first one was the necessity for human perfectibility. On the 11th, it was the plan and purpose of evolution. Last week, the critical pivotal point in evolution. Today will be pitfalls on the path of progress. And we can actually look at progress and evolving as being the same thing. So we're going to be looking then at the stumbling blocks to our spiritual progress that can impede our evolution. The Ocean of Theosophy states that evolution is a spiral, and hopefully it will always be going in an upward direction. So during this time period, when we're traveling along this spiral, what is holding us back is that we're in this period of evolution. Our mind, which is dual, there's a higher and a lower nature. They're fighting each other now. And this path to progress, the ultimate goal will be for the higher and the lower to merge themselves. Now, there's only one mind, but we are using it in two different directions. And it is the intensity or lack thereof that will determine the pathway of our spiritual progress, the intensity of the work that we are going to be doing. Many years ago, when we were first doing platform work, it had been explained to us that one concept that we needed to keep in mind when we were presenting ideas is that everything that we do, everything that we see, this whole philosophy is based on three fundamental propositions. The philosophy puts forth that it is upon these three fundamentals that the working of the seen and unseen worlds can be explained. And these three fundamental ideas also affect and explain the universal ideas as well as the more mundane ones and materialistic worlds that we are living in now. So based on all of this, we will demonstrate how one can look at the pitfalls to progress in the light of these three fundamentals. And then towards the end, we will be looking at a little more specific one, the pitfalls, what those pitfalls are and how we can overcome them. We are not going to really concentrate exactly what those pitfalls can be. We will discuss them generally, but we felt as though during the discussion part of the class, maybe some more of those will come forward. So to begin with, then, we do have, as a basis, we do have to look at this idea of the sevenfold nature of man. Man is, as we say, is sevenfold. He has four lower transient characteristics. These only last per each life. A person is born, and these four lower characteristics, and the lowest one is the body. And then we have the astral form, which is the design body that the physical form is based upon. And we have prana, which is the life force. The life force. And then the passions and desires. And it is these passions and desires which joins with this lower mind that we explained. And it is the two of them that we have to conquer. So the top three are Atma, which is spirit, Buddhi, spiritual soul, and mind, which we've mentioned. It can go either down to the passions or desires, or it can go up to the Buddhi principle, which is the spiritual soul. So the three fundamentals and how it all fits in with all of this. The three fundamentals are deity, law, and evolution. The deific principle we cannot really speak of, because if we speak of it at all, we are limiting that principle. But the universal oversoul is actually what reincarnates, and it emanates from this deific essence. This deific idea is eternal, it is omnipotent, it is nameless, and we call it beingness rather than a being. And so when we're looking at what is progressing, we said about mind or manas. So the spiritual progress is how we are, just lost our train, is the main particular point in this whole idea, is that of the deific essence and the universal oversoul emanating from it. And how we learn our lessons is because this idea of the universal oversoul, the only way it can connect with the physical realm is through this idea of mind, of manas. And we just want to revisit part of the quote that was read earlier. He should raise the self by the self. And this self that we're talking about, there are basically three different kinds. We're going to be looking at the lower self, which is mind and the passions together. In this play upon self, the higher and the lower self are meant in that the lower is the enemy of the higher. Through its resistance to true development, and the lower self is at the same time the enemy of its own best interests through its downward tendencies. So because mind is dual, And we are working at this stage of evolution from the lower. This is why it's talking about it being enemy of the higher. And the higher and lower self refer to the spiritual and material nature in man, respectively. The higher self being that is going towards the Bodhi spiritual principle. And as we said a couple times, the lower self is going downwards towards the passions and desires. So the second fundamental is that of law. Law refers to cycles. In the philosophy, cycles is a very major point of the philosophy. And the cycles affect everything, even universally when we're looking at planets and suns and stars. The cycles they have is that they're disappearing and they come back. We can look at cycles coming all the way down to man and to nature, spring, summer, autumn, and winter, life and death, sleeping and waking. So the idea of cycles affects everything. And it's a very involved topic, and this is certainly not the platform for it, but it is a very interesting idea. And the way the cycles affects man's nature is that of karma and reincarnation. And karma affects man's ability to use his free will, because he's bringing forward from past lives whatever lessons he has to learn. And sometimes these lessons do affect the way he is able to use his free will. And it is this idea of free will and making the correct choices which will determine the pitfalls, if any, we will have on our path to progress. And the third fundamental is that of evolution. And this is the main topic of today's class, is that path to progress is the same basically as evolution, because as our progress goes, so goes our evolving. And it actually is the evolution of soul, because as we're trying to pull up this idea of mind from the lower aspects of passions and desires, that is how we are evolving, is how fast and how consistently we can function from that Bodhi principle. And there's an idea in the philosophy called the pivotal doctrine. And basically what this means is that whereas in some religions, if you confess your sins to somebody, those sins are wiped away. Whereas the philosophy feels as though, no, you are responsible for everything you think, do, and say. And so those ideas and thoughts from a past life, those actions, they're brought forward so that we can use them as opportunities. And we always like that. Mr. Judge uses it, opportunities for growth, so that we can change our ideas. And that is the difference between the humans and the lower kingdoms, is that we can see the results of our actions. We can detach ourselves, pull back, and think, well, if I do this, then this is going to happen. But if I change it and do that, maybe something else will. Is that we know that if we do that same thing over and over again, we're not getting the results that we want. Well, maybe we need to change our ideas. We have to gain an acquaintance with the self, which is to be raised. The greater and more accurate the acquaintance is, the quicker will proceed the working of elevating that being who attempts it. So this is from a quote from The Voice of the Silence, which is a wonderful devotional book that we do have for sale. The more thou dost advance, the more thy feet pitfalls were meet. The path that leadeth on is lit by one fire, the light of daring burning in the heart. The more one dares, the more he shall obtain. The more he fears, the more that light shall pale, and that alone can guide. This is not from The Voice, but it's a very wonderful, just one sentence. To give up the effort is to admit failure, the only failure known in occultism. So the whole idea then is we have to keep trying, because if we don't keep trying to, you know, if things become difficult for us, we have to keep trying, because not to try will get us into issues in a future life. So that is the whole thing we have to look at, is that we have to do. So looking at our defects then, or pitfalls, that is the first step that we have to do, is to just be aware that if things aren't going right, that we have to change something. And just like with resolutions, it is said that when you make a resolution and you say, I will not do something anymore, the important thing is to add it, to put something into that place. Replace it with a problem. And most of the time we are so distracted every day with materialism, with things bombarding us from the outside, from the news, from, you know, there's just so many distractions, you know, all the technical things that we have to play with today. And by looking at them, looking outward, we're using our outward senses. The philosophy speaks about pulling back, pulling into, and using our inner senses to find that sacred in the mundane. We always think of making a meal, you know, it's just something, oh no, I have to figure out what to do, take something out of the freezer, blah, blah, blah. But looking at that process with a more sacred bent to it, like, you know, here I am, I have the knowledge, I know how to cook, I can make a healthy meal for my family. Looking at the people that prepared that food before it comes to our refrigerator, to just look at everything with a higher attitude. We have another one sentence quote. Will not allow himself to be shaken by the emotional part of himself. This has to be chosen by himself alone. So it is each one of us that can choose how our lives are going to be. If it's going to be a more spiritual one, looking at how everything works together, looking at universal brotherhood, that we are all one, that what affects one person will affect everyone. And there's the idea of the Kali Yuga, which is, there are what we call yugas. There are huge periods of time. And the Kali Yuga is the one we are in now. And it is considered the dark age. A lot of materialism. We are given a lot of opportunities for advancement now, because it is a very short period, relatively speaking, and it moves very fast. So whatever things we can conquer now in Kali Yuga, we can move faster along that path to progress. And we're looking at, as we move on, obtaining soul powers And these are like charity, patience, love, imagination. And this is what we're aiming for. The whole idea of this path to progress has to do with, we are not looking at ourselves that, you know, I need to better myself. You know, I want to have these powers. It's because ultimately we want to help our fellows, whether it be man or the lower kingdoms. And one of the worst things we can do when we're looking at these pitfalls is not to compare ourselves with anybody else, because everybody has their own karma. Everybody is bringing forth what it is that they have to learn. And even comparing ourselves to ourselves, it's like, oh, I should be further along. I should be able to do this. I should know that. We just have to do our best. That is all any of us are asked to do. And doing nothing, it, like we said earlier, will come back to us. So the biggest effect, we think we said initially, on how we progress is that of karma. There are characteristics we call skandhas that are like electrically waiting out there. These are the characteristics from our past lives. And they kind of lie in wait to be expressed in any lifetime. And karma affects us physically, emotionally, and psychically. It'll work on all three streams. And there's an idea of what is called a karmic block, that say somebody has the desire to do great things to help people, but, you know, for whatever reason, they're not able to organize themselves. They don't know how to follow through on things. So this is checked by karma, as we say. But we have to be aware, though, that these pitfalls do not occur because of karma, because karma is always just. But it is what we do that creates these karmic opportunities that can come to us. We can become bitter. We can become overreacting. But all in all, it is us that we have to take responsibility for. We can be aware of karma and know what it does and how it reacts, but we also have to know that we are the cause of it. And by knowing these ideas, hopefully it will remove some of the mental anguish that we are experiencing, which will enable the higher to come through, and we'll be able to surmount that pitfall. And the last thing we want to discuss in regards to the pitfalls is duty. Duty we mean what is coming to us. Karma creates creates these situations from what we have done in the past. So whatever is coming to us, that is our duty to look at. It is ours. Becoming aware of what our duty is, combined with motive, we have to have the proper motive when these occurrences happen. And motive being, as we said before, that we don't expect to have anything come to us in return if we're doing our duty. It is because it has to be done. And trying not to do it grudgingly, but to do it because this is our baggage that we have to take care of. And if we do our duty with the wrong motive, you know, like I want to make this cake for somebody so that they will like me more, that will be revisited in a future life. So we want to just read a wonderful section from Robert Crosby, from his Homely Hints. A truly spiritual person is full of contentment with whatever comes by the power of rising above attractions and aversions, and because he has done so, he is without envy. In daily life, we have to act. In the battles of existence, we have to accept a failure here and a defeat there, but we must do so by rising above the pair of opposites so that we face with equal-mindedness success as well as failure, and face them with cheer and not with a whine. Let us overcome the two main obstacles. First, do not be passively resigned, but say cheerfully, "Now let me learn what this particular karma has to teach." Next, do not be afraid to act. Do not try to run away from the field of duty. The Gita teaches that by acting, by doing our duties, the fetters of destiny, the bonds of fate, the chains of karma fall away. Very few obtain the sight of the heart because they do not educate themselves. Heart perception is what we have to obtain, and growth of the self is marked by that perception of the heart. As long as we do not obtain heart perception, we are infants crying in the night, crying for the light, and the end of life comes ere we have found that light. And when we read this, we felt, gee, all I have to do is read this to the class and that'll be it. Because he says everything in here about that progress on the path. So we'll take questions and we can have some discussion. Yes.
You were saying about like someone shouldn't bake a cake for someone because they want that person to like them more. But don't people tend to help out people that they like, or family relatives or associates, as opposed to like if I walk outside right here, you know, someone may ask me, you know, for some money or change or anything like that, and because I don't know that person, I may not give them anything. Whereas if it's a family member or as a child, you know, my children or my niece and nephew or whoever, I'm maybe more inclined to give them something.
Well, that's just, the question is, why do we seem to be very willing to give family and friends help and maybe not the man on the street who needs some money or food? We think that that's a natural inclination to do that. And in regards to the family issues, helping them is certainly what we have to do as a family unit. We help each other. When we were speaking of motives, it would be nice that we're doing it because they're family, not because we want that particular family member to like us more. And in regards to the man on the street, that's a very complicated issue, because we always hear that if you give some money to somebody who's begging, they may go out and get something to drink. But then again, it's not our decision to make what they're going to do with that money. But if the impulse is there to give a person money, go ahead and do that, because it's like giving a gift to somebody. We don't know what they're going to be doing with it. But we're giving them the gift because, you know, we feel as though it's something. But that's a very complicated issue, whether to do or not to do it. Yes?
We've always heard that we are put into, we are born into families where we can best develop. And that the lesson that we need to learn is we know we love our children, we love our family, but the time is that we need to expand that love beyond the family into our community, mm-hmm. and then into our nation, and then into our world. But it's, of course, it's a heart quality, and we all stand like we're afraid to be good, because someone's going to take advantage of us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's what we meant by it's a very complicated issue, but it what was said in regards to, you know, we focus on our family, mm-hmm. then our friends, and hopefully go out. There's so many agencies out there where people can donate, and in the Key to Theosophy, it suggested that we not have a middleman when we're donating. But it is, you know, we have to pick, in regards to different agencies, we need to pick and choose which ones will be using our money more faithfully. And in regards to the man on the street, we always used to not give money but buy food. And that's always something that we can do. You had your hand up? In the way in the back?
We were thinking as you were speaking, this whole idea of pitfalls. For a majority of people who don't either have a background in the philosophy of life, they look at the idea of pitfalls coming to them in a very negative way because they have no idea that they are the creator of these pitfalls.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that we think that somebody who does not have who does not have a background in karma and reincarnation, we think might be living a very frustrated life because we were comparing ourselves, thinking about this as to what my life is like now and how I think about it and previously. And we always felt as though it wasn't our fault. It wasn't something that we did. It's, you know, Joe on the street did it to me. So it is, we think it's a comfort to know, but it's also a great responsibility for us to know that whatever we do, whatever we say, and even whatever we think, because thoughts generate energy, and thoughts can definitely impact on our karma. Yes?
It seems from the reading and the talk, they mention two selves, one all in capital letters and the other in small letters, which means there's a duality mm-hmm. in our nature. And we have to find out which one to focus on. And we learn the meaning of personal selfishness, egotism. And then we see, and even in the book, self in capital letters is the friend of self in small letters. And that self, small letters, is the enemy of itself. What does all of that mean? Are we trying to point at something here, some sense of unity or baseline to start from?
The question has to do with the duality of the mind, basically. the mind is a principle, and when mind is manifested in form, it becomes dual in nature, but it is still one. It's like a glove, you know, you have, you know, both sides, but it's still a hand. So we're working at this stage in our evolution, we're working from primarily from that lower aspect combined with the passions and desires. We hear in some of the classes about behind will stands desire. Will is the action part. And depending upon desire being dual as well, acting from a higher or a lower aspect, what the pitfalls, what this class is about today, is that we have to elevate that lower nature and trying to pull it away in a more consistent basis from those passions and desires and merge it back into one, being the vehicle for that spiritual soul. So this is something, I mean, it's a good thing we have many lives to do this, because it's not something that we're going to be doing in any one lifetime. Yes?
Well, if we consider the idea of raising the self by the self, Mr. Judge was asked by a student, so, you know, that can get pretty complicated, what's the first step toward learning what that's all about? And he said that the first step is living a life of virtue, because we build merit when we live a life of virtue. What kind of merit is it that we build, and why is virtue so important if we're going to try to start to raise the self?
So why is virtue so important then? And he's looking at that, you said, as being the first. Okay, well, virtue, we're thinking is that a virtuous person is one that is leading the good life. We think it has something to do with how a person looks at life in general, and helping others, looking at universal brotherhood as a fact in nature. And by doing that, and we don't want to say being good, but being higher minded, we can see then how those merits, but we don't want to do it. The whole thing is motive. If we're looking at trying to live a virtuous life, it's not because we want to gain those merits. It's because it's duty. It's what has to be done. So gaining those merits, it depends on the motive, we think. Did you want to follow up?
If a virtuous person is a person who has the moral courage to do something, even though it may not be the popular thing to do, how is it that that would help him raise the self by the self?
Because the more a person is living in that kind of a life, the more consistently he is contacting that spiritual side of his nature, that will help to elevate the lower nature. In the back?
And that turning away from the lower desires, it reminds us in the Voice of the Silence that as we go along this path, even one glance backward, one memory of, it doesn't say a particular kind of nature, but we would think it would be connected with the lower impulses, wipes out what you've done. You don't lose that, because you still have the impulse, hopefully, to live an ethical life, but it takes you back to perhaps where you began to understand, I should live an ethical life. So it really is turning our attention away from the personal, selfish wants and needs, and looking outward to see where we can be of help. And those merits are karmic merits. The more we do that, the more we have potentially changed and uplifted our karma for future births, although that's not the intention per se. It is the reward.
Yes, it's how we are. It, like, we keep going back to motive, and we don't want to keep bringing that up, but it is how we live that virtuous life and get those merits is because of doing our duty with the right motive. Yes?
he can see that you can be very easily overwhelmed by all of this. Mm-hmm. Where do I start? What do I do? I'm confused. Oh, I got it today, but tomorrow I forgot all about it. And mm-hmm. and how, you know, and like I need to keep on reminding myself mm-hmm. that I'm not the body, that I'm this eternal aspect. We were told when we first came here that if you want to know the philosophy and how to put it into action, it's what you mentioned, the Bhagavad Gita. It is just, it's stated very clearly how we need to act, how we need to think, what we need to do, and how we need to do it. And the idea of detachment and to live the higher life. It says in the Gita that we must give all of our actions up to that higher aspect, to all. Because you mentioned the fact of a universal brotherhood. Well, universal brotherhood is not an ideal. It's a fact mm-hmm. in nature. And that this fact alone, that here we are, we're at the pinnacle of, or the apex of that evolutionary process. We stand at the top. And we are like those gods. We need out pain and suffering, or love and joy and expansion and all that. I mean, it seems that we are the ones that have created this world in which we live.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have, then therefore we can create a better world.
As was stated, we are at the pinnacle of the stage of evolution. And in the Ocean of Theosophy, it is stated that we are dynamos, which means that we can affect change in any realm of this earth that we really can think of. But also, as was said, we are not this body. This body is an illusion. It's transitory. We're going to lose it, but when we come back, we'll start over with another one. And our senses that we keep looking outward and being affected by so much that is out there, not just the negative. I mean, the good things can also distract us from looking inward at our spiritual nature. And it is very overwhelming trying to do it. But the philosophy gives us these tools. And we don't want a newcomer coming in and saying, oh, I want to read the secret doctrine. You know, that's not going to work. We have to start little by little. And by doing that, as was stated, the Bhagavad Gita is a roadmap. And basically, one of the things it says is that you do your duty and not expect anything in return, and you don't anticipate what that person is going to do with whatever it is you're doing or giving to them. So it is. It's a huge topic, and we need to just take one step at a time. And we have a lot of help aids out on the desk, different things that we can read. You had your hand up?
Yes. This whole subject, like every month, I have a lady, like an older lady, like at this church I went to. And she probably...
Oh, excuse me, a little louder, please.
This whole subject. Okay, it reminds me of this older lady that at this church I went to. She probably lived till 90. But this woman, every day of her life, did for others with ever not asking anything in return. And looking at me, she had to get her wings. Because she was just a beautiful person, always giving and never looking back. And I mean, you know, it was just her nature, just all the time, to put other people in front of her and never ask for nothing in return.
Yeah, and we're thankful there are people out there like that. Especially around the holidays, it's like we hear so much more of people that are doing that. And then the rest of the year, those people are probably still doing all these good things, but, you know, it's not the holidays, so we don't hear about them. But there are people like that, and just because they don't know the philosophy doesn't mean they can't be theosophists and not realize it. In the back.
Okay. So how does somebody maintain that goodness that she was talking about? Because a lot of people will start off like that, then all of a sudden they just get frustrated, or they really revert back to, like, how is this benefiting me? And, you know, before you know it, you thought you could ask this person for a helping hand, and then all of a sudden they say no, or there's some type of strings attached. So how does somebody become like the 90-year-old woman she was just talking about, where all 90 years were just, you know, geared to helping people, and, you know, no one has anything negative to say about it?
So how do we maintain this whole thing, you know, like this 90-year-old woman? And it's, you know, it's practice. Well, first of all, there's the awareness that a change has to be made. And the previous comment about feeling overwhelmed, it's knowledge that we have to gain to keep ourselves on track. And by knowing that this is the right thing to do, and we forget where it was, but mainly, you know, it is said when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
That's Confucius, I think.
Confucius. And so that's what we can look at. We have to keep doing. We have to keep going. And we talk about meditating in the morning, planning our day, looking at our day before we actually get out of bed and all the craziness starts, to kind of orient ourselves to looking at things, you know, the spiritual and the mundane. And then at night, it is suggested that we look over the day and see where things could have been changed. Maybe we, you know, rather than getting angry at a coworker, you know, maybe just say, oh, wow, are things going bad? You know, how are you doing? That kind of a thing. Ooh, lots of hands, lots of suggestions.
Well, we think that helping others is it's one form of instant gratification, really. And you get an immediate exchange, and you feel useful. And really, isn't that what everyone wants, to feel useful?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the most basic reason for living, we think, is to be of use to others, to feel useful. And you know, hopefully you have the right motive, too. Mm-hmm. You're not doing it to manipulate others. But if you're not doing it to manipulate, if just out of your own free will,
mm-hmm.
it is instantly gratifying, and one feels of great use.
Yes. Any more on this? Yes.
Well, you mentioned this, but this is a feeling. This is that overcomes us, but it's part of our emotional nature. If we don't want to do anything, we don't do it. But it says that if we want to be spiritual beings or live a spiritual life, we have to desire it. We have to desire it above all, above everything else. We have to desire to sit at the feet of those masters again, because we probably, all of us, have in prior lives sat in the company of wise men. And it's this desire. Even though we live in a world that desire has overwhelmed all of us, but we have to have a higher desire. And once we cultivate that, we can do anything. Because it said, behind will stands desire, and will move the universe.
Yes, the whole idea with trying to make our desires more consistently towards that Bodhi spiritual nature, it will change our motive, and by acting on the will, and then the will actually does all the action, you know, we can accomplish a lot. In the back.
You know, we love the phrase we've heard here, resist without resisting. And that would seem to fit in well with the pitfalls. We come across, we're doing our best, we are making our way through the world, trying to be helpful, trying to keep spiritual ideas in mind, and we meet a pitfall. Resist without resisting. Understand it's part of a karmic lesson, and do not resist it coming, yet resist your lower nature to fight against it and continue to try to reach up to the higher within, as was just expressed, and continue that work. But we will meet these pitfalls and want to give up the 90-year-old every single day resisted not doing the work that was there for her to be done. And those examples are examples we should follow.
And we don't even know what that 90-year-old went through in the beginning part of her life. It could have been, you know, one motivating factor that would have changed her whole life around. We don't know what it was, but we do know how it ended, and it certainly seems like it, you know, she spent her life well. Yes?
Well, if we consider that phrase, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear, which it seems is directly related to the subject tonight, because we're talking about raising the self by the self. If the person's living a life of, more of a life of virtue, and he's gaining that karmic merit, then he's obviously moving from a place where he was into someplace new. And so he's creating certain causes with himself, within himself or herself, and becoming ready. So the teacher would appear. Is the teacher a person, or is the teacher something else? And what would a student of theosophy, what could he or she expect the teacher to be if he starts applying these universal philosophical principles? Is there a teacher here who's going to?
Yes.
Yes, the teacher is here. And we can find the teacher on the book table between these two rooms. And that, you know, that it's independent devotion to the cause of theosophy. It's something that each of us have to pursue. We have to have the desire to know the truth. And it has to be a burning desire in this world of illusion that we live in. So,
this one of the readings started out from the voice of the silence, the more thou dost advance, the more thy feet pitfalls will meet. And we think karma is that teacher as well. And it is said that the more we go along the path, the more opportunities we will meet. And our meeting is over. Let's all go meet those opportunities with a cheerful voice. Thank you.